Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
We start this hour in Russia, where four men have been charged in that terror attack at a Moscow concert hall Friday that left more than 130 people dead, more injured, the hall burned. A branch of the Islamic State, ISIS-K, claimed responsibility, and U.S. and Western intelligence agencies had warned Russia about an imminent attack before the attack. But in a speech last Tuesday, President Putin spoke to a Russian intelligence group and called the warnings outright blackmail and an attempt to destabilize Russian society. He also hinted after the attack that Ukraine had something to do with it. NPR Moscow correspondent Charles Maines is here. Charles, start just first with the photos of these suspects. They all look very badly beaten. What more do we know?
Yeah, these are the four suspects who were detained by Russian security agents on Saturday. They were brought to a Moscow courtroom late Sunday. All are citizens of the former Soviet Republic of Tajikistan in Central Asia. According to closed court documents, all confessed to carrying out this attack. But as you say, their appearance in court, there was no question they showed outward signs of torture, not least because the security forces released some footage of them torturing these men. You know, one of the suspects had a bandage around his ear after it was cut off, apparently, by one of his interrogators. Another seemed semi-conscious, so he was brought in basically on a hospital gurney. He appeared to have lost an eye. The others certainly looked dazed and bruised and cut. There was some evidence, at least shared on social media, that some of these men had been subjected to some electrocution as well.
Putin was very late to even acknowledge the attack. Then Russia held a national day of mourning. Just tell us briefly about the victims and the mood there where you are in Moscow.
Well, the mood is quite dark, as you might imagine. I mean, this is a national tragedy. It was a day of mourning on Sunday. Just the city itself just seems quieter these days. That may sound strange, given that Russia's been at war in Ukraine for the last 2 years, over 2 years now. But there's certain kind of a routine that's developed where the kind of life has gone on. Russians seem to basically tune out, at least in Moscow, most of the war in Ukraine and some of the suffering there. And in terms of the victims, you know, these are people from all ages and all walks of life. Three were children. They'd come to see this Soviet-era rock band called Picnic, or Picnic in Russian. They played their old hits. So it was kind of a music and memory evening that just went horribly, horribly awry. Some were down by gunfire. Others were down by smoke inhalation. Others because the roof collapsed on this venue after this fire broke out. But I'd like to point out, we're also learning about heroes. There was a young man named Islam Khalimov. He's a high school student originally from Kyrgyzstan who worked as a coat check attendant during the concert. And he led some 100 people out through this maze of hallways to a back entrance to safety.
Oh. Well, I mean, it's just terrible. It's lovely to hear of that, you know, stories like that. But what about what seemed to be terrible security lapses? Putin scoffing at U.S. warnings before the attack, trying to insinuate it was Ukraine after the attack. Talk about questions we're hearing now about where President Putin has been putting his focus.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was out this weekend twice at Crocus City Hall. This is the venue where the tragedy took place, meeting people who work there. And they were pointing out that, you know, security, these guys had nightsticks, batons, tasers, but, you know, stuff to basically search for a lighter at a concert, nothing that could stop an assault team. And that's what this was. You know, and these people died not just because of gunfire, but because of the fire that broke out subsequently. But you're right. This, you know, fundamentally raises these questions about intelligence failures. Some certainly would argue that the Kremlin is so focused on its perceived domestic enemies, those who are against the war in Ukraine or supporters of the opposition or even, you know, the LGBT community here, that they're not addressing real legitimate threats like we saw on Friday. And certainly there are those who look more generously at the Kremlin's actions. They would say, look, these guys, you know, nothing could have stopped them from doing this, and yet they're in handcuffs within 24 hours, and they consider that a success.
This is ISIS-K that's claimed responsibility for the attack, a branch of the Islamic State. They're active in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iran. Some have pointed to the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan years ago for a possible—that seems like a long time ago. So What's the speculation about why they would target Russia now?
Well, first of all, Russia seems very less interested in the role of ISIS-K, but I think most Western experts would say it dates back to the Russian intervention in the war in Syria in 2015. Mm-hmm. And since then, we've seen ISIS carry out attacks against Russian targets. So, for example, a plane was downed over the Sinai Peninsula in Egypt as it was on its way to St. Petersburg. Several hundred people died. There was a metro bombing in St. Petersburg again in 2017, but of course, St. Petersburg being Vladimir Putin's hometown. And so, you know, while the West is sort of obsessing over this split in the East and the West over, you know, Russia and Western relations, you know, to ISIS, you know, it's all the same enemy. They've certainly had Russia in its crosshairs for some time now.
Mm-hmm. Boy, NPR international correspondent Charles Maines, thank you, as always, for your view from the ground there in Moscow. Thank you.
Thank you.